My special guest in the studio today, it's Miles Thomas and his trio Lumberjack. He's a drummer and he's performed and recorded with a whole host of and a cross-section of artists such as Thirsty Merc, Jake Meadows, Ronan Keating, Ray Beadle, Eugene Hideaway Bridges. The list goes on and on. Miles Thomas, welcome to Now's the Time.
How are you going? Thanks for having me.
Miles, I want to get one question out of the road up front, and you've probably heard this at jazz gigs 1,000 times. Did your folks name you after Miles Davis?
I often think that they sort of named me after the unit of measurement. You know, that's generally my response to that question. I think that was definitely a part in it. My dad used to always put on lots of music, so I was always surrounded by music as a child.
So that sort of leads into my next question, because obviously you've come from a musical family. How did you become involved with playing the drums and percussion and music in general?
Yeah, it was sort of I sort of started playing the drum set around like 11 or 12 years old, and then just dilly-dallied around in the rock and roll music of the time. But then I got quite into like electronics and audio engineering and stuff like that. So that sort of took my focus until I was in my early 20s, where I sort of came back onto the drums and started sort of pursuing that professionally rather than working in audio professionally, which I'd been doing previously. But definitely my family weren't musical per se, but they were, well, my father was a listener of music. So I think just that exposure was definitely of great benefit.
Can you list some of the influences, your musical influences? Were they necessarily always drummers or...?
Rarely. Yeah. I just like people that can generate an emotional impact in me. So that sort of, to me, that transcends instrument and style and things like that. So, and I feel like a lot of drummers get involved in the mechanics of the instrument and not the execution of music. And so, yeah, it's actually rarely drummers that sort of blow me away. But saying that, there are some amazing ones. So I really love like people like Jim Keltner and Simon Barker and Evan Mennell and like Hamish, lots of local people. But yeah, there's so many amazing drummers that are musicians, not just chops people, you know.
Now, Lumberjack, am I correct that this was Penn Island before Lumberjack?
That is correct.
And Lumberjack, the other logical question, I suppose, that I was going to ask you, does this name now come from Monty Python's Flying Circus?
I'd love to say that, yes, but no. So in Penn Island, which we've put out two albums that are available on all the streaming platforms, we each had a stage name, Stallion, which was myself, Lumberjack, which was Brett Hurst, and Phantom Jazz, which was Jared Masters. And I think my concept at that point was to remove everything that's associated with jazz apart from the music. So I gave it almost like a comic appearance to sort of remove that elitism almost. So it's just the music, you take it for what that is. But, you know, getting a little bit older and getting tired of putting on, because we used to wear funny outfits, putting on funny outfits.
Or in Jared's case, he didn't wear funny
outfits. Well, yeah. There might have been a birthday suit involved. But, and getting older and still loving to play this sort of music with those guys especially. So I decided to sort of do a 3-album run under each of our names. So the first one being Lumberjack. And so all the music was sort of sketches brought by Brett to the session. So this album is his, but it was like he just brought some sketches of tune and some whole tunes, but sketches, and we just worked them out on the fly and played the music, which I think gives it a nice freshness. Ooh. Rather than something where we'd like sat and rehearsed. Most of them are the first take of us playing through the music for the first time, which I really love hearing that freshness. So coming up later this month, we're doing another album, and this will be called Phantom Jazz because it's all tunes by Jared.
Right. Okay.
And then following on. So we'll actually change the band name again. So it's horrible for the fans, if they're, you know.
Yeah, well, you've got to be sort of on the inside to know what's going on here.
Yeah.
Are you constantly mindful of your participation in the arts and its sort of benefit to culture, society more generally? Is that something that you're mindful of on a day-to-day basis when you're creating?
It comes and goes in waves of being aware of things like that. It's definitely, I mean, because all three of us, we're all full-time musos, so like there are things we sometimes do to pay the bills that might not be what we think are fulfilling the cultural requirements of the city we live in, but others might disagree and say that is. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to never to have to pay rent and then to only pursue my artistic pursuits, but so it's sort of a juggling act in that terms of paying your bills and being artistically satisfied, which is sort of why I love this project, because I don't care if it sells zero copy. Like, I've already written the money off when I sign up to do it, so it's music for me and for us. Do you know, like, ooh, it's not, yeah, ooh, yeah, there's no commercial
aspirations.
Yeah, yeah, which I think is sort of part of the self-sabotage that we're constantly doing to ourselves.
So does that mean you find yourself, I don't know, teaching to supplement or you just...
No, I just play full-time. I do a lot of, like, contemporary music and studio recording.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mostly, like, rock and pop acts because they're the ones touring and have money, you know, like, but I also love that music. It's not that I dislike it, it's just that is more financially viable to pursue. But then I get to play music like with a piano trio and improvise a lot, which I really enjoy doing. And I think also by doing the more commercial music, it allows me to treat my artistic pursuits with, I guess, sort of, I give them more ability to be overwhelming rather than thinking about the commercial aspects of it. And mm-hmm. because I'm already making money playing other types of music, so that then this one I'm only doing it for the music. There's zero, like, commercial interest.
What do you think the audience is going to be mostly moved by?
If people want to be moved, we will attempt to have an emotional impact through the music. And they're really beautiful tunes by Brett. And then we just play them down and sort of follow the rabbit, you know, which is different every time. Yeah.
So where do you want to take this? I mean, I know you've said that you don't have any aspirations, but if the Wangaratta Festival rings you up, are you down there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're definitely up for doing gigs and stuff, but we'll do them our way.
Yeah.
But I actually more see this band almost as a recording project, because you can play a different way in the studio. You're able to play with a lot more intimacy because of the noise floor of the environment. So you can do a lot of things that you can't do on a gig, which I really like exploiting, like very quiet pieces or things like that. Things that can work on gigs, but they have to be the perfect gig with the perfect environment, like, whereas in the studio you just make it that way. But yeah, I mean, we'll definitely be doing more gigs, but for me I envision it more as a studio project where we put out as much recorded music as possible.
You've been working with these guys for a long, long time now, and in especially Jared in sort of different formats. What do these two guys bring to the trio setting that really attracts you?
I have been working with both of these gentlemen for a very long time now. And I've learned so much about music from both of them. And especially, like, I started playing with Jared when I was sort of 17, 18. Definitely in that chrysalis stage where people were learning about music, and he was the perfect person at that time to sort of give me direction and strive for originality. I think one thing I've learned from Jared especially is when improvising to follow where you're going, you know, don't think about, just follow what's happening.
Be self-conscious about,
yeah, yeah, that, and just sort of see where the music goes rather than thinking about anything else, like, which I really love that openness. And there's a lot of other improvisers like that now that I see, especially younger coming up, so must be in the water or something. But having that openness to be able to just forget about the music that you were playing, and then the music we're playing is what's happening right now, not the things that's come prior, as in literally in the moment, not but yeah. And then playing with Brett, I think Brett was the first double bass player that I played with, and the time feel felt like water, like I was skiing across water. It was so smooth, and that I'd never experienced that before. And to be honest, rarely still, like, and I play with a lot of different people now, but yeah, I think maybe because both of these guys play a lot of other types of music as well, which I do as well. We just seem to slot in together.
And we're going to take the opening track, which is called Hold the Shot. Now, as you mentioned, these are all Brett Hurst pieces. Tell us a little bit about Hold the Shot, Miles.
Well, I can tell you that I read the chart down as I played it. We talked about it for about 10 minutes before we recorded it, and I think this was the first take and the first tune of the day. So it's a very... I just love the freshness in the... I listened to the whole album again last night. I hadn't heard it in a while, and I really like that sort of freshness. That's all I got. Thank you so much.
Miles Thomas.